We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And welcome to episode 133 of McChesney Unchained, coming to you from thednbr.com. Make sure you get down to the DNBR Sports Bar and Studio off of Colfax and support all your local Colorado teams. That place kicks ass, man, and they're always rocking down there at the bar. The food is awesome. The drinks are awesome. The atmosphere is second to none. So make sure you get down to the DNBR bar and check it out. Check out all the great content at thednbr.com as usual. Chris Dempsey is our guest today on episode 133 of McChesney Unchained. You see him on Altitude. He's always filling in with myself on Altitude Sports Radio. He's a good friend of mine. We rocked the house last Friday, so I thought we'd have him on this week's edition of McChesney Unchained. So Chris will be joining us here shortly. But as always, McChesney Unchained is brought to you by our friends at DraftKings. And football fans out there, who's ready to score some free bets? Now you can when you bet on any NFL game this week with DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the National Football League. New customers who bet just $1 on either team to score can win $100 in free bets. DraftKings customers can also get their skin in the game with new same-game parlays. That means you can combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. And best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNBR and bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game. And bet just $1 on any NFL team to win their game. And you can get up to $100 in free bets. Also, don't forget about the parlays and everything else you can get into this weekend. You must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Do you have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. And we roll here on McChesney Unchained, episode 133. My man Chris Dempsey joins us here. Chris, what's happening, brother? Welcome to the show. Good to see your face.
Man, I appreciate it. It's an honor to be on your show. Thanks for having me on, man.
How's life, bro?
It's complicated.
Yeah, usually is.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. You know, I did test positive for COVID, and so I've been sitting at home for the last few days. Not really super sick, but I did test positive. So
bored out of your mind.
Yeah, so bored. Well, it's the most boring thing ever.
Oh, yeah. I had COVID a couple months ago, and all I did was sit in my basement. It was super boring. So, but hey, hey, life goes on. Chris is the pride of Montbello High School here in Denver. I went to NIWAT. He's a proud CU Buff, as am I. We're going to talk about a whole lot of different stuff here today on McChesney Unchained as we get rolling here. Make sure you check out DraftKings, obviously, for this weekend's parlays and bets. But right off the bat, I just want to shine some light on some of the Dungeon family around the country that have been balling both in high school and in college. We've got more offers out this weekend. Bryce Bass, the legend running back, got CSU Pueblo. Coach Risson offered him a full ride, and then Ed McCaffrey and UNC offered him last week. Jackson Adams, a defensive end over at Arapahoe, got Air Force a full ride, and Coach Wilson up at Colorado offered him a preferred walk-on as well, so that's a huge get for Jackson Adams over at Arapahoe, who's a really good player. Jacob Newpier got Western, his first offer, so I'm pretty proud of Big Jake over at Rock Canyon. Zach Henning has bagged Colorado, Nevada, and Colorado State in the last 2 weeks. And we added two more commits to the list. Braden Miller's going to Michigan State. Caden Weatherby's going to Texas Tech. Luke Meyer's going to Air Force. Connor Jones going to Michigan. Luke Hill commits to Western. Luke's is the son of Gene Hill, who was the head coach down at Douglas County, and now Luke is the center at Shap. He committed to Western. And then Ramos, my man Ramos over at Arapahoe High School, playing for Coach Joe New. And then Tyler Brayton is their defensive line coach over there. He plays with Jackson. Ramos commits to Coach Adazio up at Colorado State. Huge pickup for them. I think he's the best defensive lineman in the state at three technique. Colorado tried to get him as a walk-on, and it wouldn't take. And my man Jabbar Ramos goes to Colorado State as a commit. So that's seven commits in this year's class already as we roll into 2021. All right, so Chad Muma, the senior linebacker up at Wyoming, wins Mountain West Defensive Player of the Week again, his third time this year alone, for his play in the Border War with 11 tackles and a pick and two TFLs. He was also named to the Big Narek Award watch list last week, the legend linebacker. That's one of those guys that you can't let out of Colorado. Again, I beat on Colorado's door so hard to recruit this kid, and they didn't even talk to him really. But Muma is going to be a first, second, third round draft pick out of Wyoming this year. He really reminds me a lot of Luke Wilson, who is the starting linebacker for the Cincinnati Bengals. Keep your eye on Chad Muma. He will be our guest next week on episode 134 as we talk about hopefully their win against Boise on Friday night. So big, big tip of the cap to Chad Muma. CU, we'll talk about them in a minute. They got a huge win the other night. Just got to tip my cap to Jake Wiley and Casey Roddick, two guys that are on NAI deals with 6-0, and two of my guys that I've been working with for many, many, many years. Both been playing really, really well under the tutelage of the new offensive line coach. They both were solid factors in that running game the other night that sprung Bussard. Chase Penry, the true freshman up there, has been absolutely balling out of his mind. Number three, keep your eye on him as the year goes on. Nate Lamman, obviously named the Buckus list, one of 18 guys. I don't think he has a chance to win it this year because of missing two games. But before that Cal game, you had to say that he was probably the best pure middle linebacker in the country. I would say Muma is probably a better linebacker top to bottom, just from a running standpoint, running sideline to sideline. But I don't know if you could find anybody better in the box than Nate Lamman. And then to kind of seal the deal here for Friday night, Shea Oladipo and the Boise State 3, Caden Dudley and Corey Kringlin win their last year out of Holy Family and Palmer Ridge, respectively. Shea went to Eagle Crest. He's won Mountain West Rookie of the Year twice this year already for his play at safety. Shea from Eagle Crest, they play Wyoming on Friday night. They had a huge win at number 22 Fresno State. They whipped that ass. That was a little Dungeon family brawl as well. As Braylon Nelson from Vista Peak is one of the rotational players for Fresno State out there. So it's always good when you see Dungeon family on Dungeon family. And then lastly, Alex Padilla. Padilla is from Cherry Creek, probably the smartest quarterback I've ever worked with in my life. By the time he left the gym to go to Iowa City and play for Coach Friends, he was teaching the quarterback meeting room and all the fronts and personnel grouping. So I am not shocked at all that the sophomore stepped in when the starter went down and went 17 for 27 and absolutely balled out, no picks. No turnovers, super effective in their win over Northwestern. He gets his first start against Minnesota this weekend for Iowa. I don't think Padilla will ever give the job back. Again, that's a kid from Cherry Creek High School who, again, I beat the absolute door down for CU to recruit hard. And now he's going to be tearing it up at Iowa City for the Iowa Hawkeyes, getting his first start this weekend. So a huge tip of the cap to Alex Padilla and him being ready for his opportunity when it springs. So that is your Dungeon Family News here for the 6-0 crew as we roll into the midpoint of the college football season. Well, the college football season is forming up. The NFL season is at its midpoint. And we roll here on episode 133. Like I said, Chris Dempsey is our guest. Chris, number one, I want to talk about Aaron Rodgers before we get into the Nuggets, because I think there's separate stories from Rodgers to the Nuggets, and then we'll get into football. As a journalist and covering all these different athletes from football to basketball, is this selfish or is it just a point in case where this guy is just making a decision for himself and did he set himself up to look as bad as he is?
Yeah. You know, it's a good question. I think all of the above, actually. and here's why I say that. I don't think anybody is super critical of an individual who is making a decision for their own body. And so the reason that I say that to say this, Aaron Rodgers clearly obviously didn't want to get the actual vaccine, went through whatever steps to get immunized, was the word that he used for himself. And that's fine. What you can't do then is that when you are asked about a vaccine, going back to prior to the season, then say mislead people as to what it is that you're actually doing. And then part two is you work for a league that has certain protocols and certain ways that it wants its players to adhere to when they are not if they are not vaccinated. And so you must adhere to those things and not act like you are above above doing those things. And so I think for Aaron Rodgers, if he would have just come out and just said, listen, this is what I believe, take it or leave it, I think we all would have understood that. Cole Beasley did the exact same thing and said, look, I'm not getting vaccinated. I don't believe in it. That's just the way it's going to be. I will do whatever they tell me to do as an unvaccinated player. And that is what he's done. And that story was a thing for maybe a week before it died down and we all just played football. And for Aaron Rodgers, you can't just fool us, just let us know what it is and then we'll all move on and adhere to the protocols for unvaccinated players. And so he didn't do that. But then when the brushback came from what he said originally, then he kind of mea culpa'd and said, well, okay, I understand that maybe some things that I said might have been misleading, and I'm sorry for that, but I just want to play football. And okay, I mean, that's all you had to say in the first place, and then put on a mask when you're on in your press conferences and you're interacting with other players on the field. So I think he did put himself in that situation. I think he realized that, and that's why you saw on the podcast that he does with his with his two guys that he backtracked on some of the stuff that he was kind of dug his heel in the sand in before.
Well, I'd like to think that he can learn from this situation, and maybe I feel like Aaron Rodgers thinks of himself as an intellectually superior than a lot of people, and
I do too.
And it really kind of rubs me the wrong way a little bit. Like he feels like he's the kind of guy like you talk to and his opinion, it just weighs more in his eyes. Mm-hmm. That kind of shit really, really bothers me, Demps. And I just feel like this is another circumstance where the selfish aspect of Aaron Rodgers is coming out. And I'm not saying I don't want him in Denver. If he wants to come here and throw 40 touchdown passes and help the Broncos win, I'm with it. But at the same time, if he doesn't come here, and we're just going to move on from this now, if he doesn't come here and he ends up going somewhere else or staying in Green Bay, good for him. That's awesome. I'm not gonna cry in my huge pillow because Aaron Rodgers' smug ass isn't in Denver. So we'll see if anything comes from this in the long run. But it's amazing to me that Aaron Rodgers and his COVID situation gets more run than Henry Ruggs killing somebody and driving 157 miles an hour and being two times over the legal limit than yeah. Like, it's just the I'm telling you, man, some of the priorities are pretty messed up, in my opinion. So I guess we'll move on from that to another story. And I'm really eager to get your thoughts on this. And I was, you know, obviously watching the Nuggets the other night. I'm a huge Nugget fan. We're not necessarily going to get into the meat of the Nuggets right now. We talked about this when we were on altitude last Friday, but it's the beginning of the season. We're trying to figure out what's what, yada, yada. I just want to talk specifically about the end of the game. Markieff Morris, whichever one of the Morris twins, they're both, yep. I think they're both whiny little bitches, to be completely honest with you. But, you know, they've been like that since they were at Kansas. That's what they are in the league. They're always pushing buttons and trying to get people under people's skin. No reason for Morris to run out of left field and shoulder Jokic. With those big guys, all you got to do is have your knee land one way, the wrong way, and it's gone. So, and I love that Joker retaliated the way he did. I think people that are, like, turned off by it need to go – find a new sport, because the NBA is already as soft as it's ever been. I think it was absolutely necessary for him to do what he did. I'm kind of pissed off none of the other Nuggets got in a fist fight, all out brawl in the middle of the court, because it was totally and unequivocally unnecessary to go shoulder check him. And then lastly, the last question I have for you would be his brothers. Like, you don't mess with Siberian Russians, bro. Like, they're not. The Morris twins can get on Twitter and talk junk. The Siberian Jokic's, like, I guarantee you they've got some KGB cousins. Like, they'll just make people disappear, bro. Like, and they are not fucking around. How many times? You just don't mess with the Russians. These are facts.
Yeah, you know, so let's just start at the top. I think for Nikola Jokic, you know what's interesting? So when that whole situation went down on the court, I basically just put myself in those shoes. Because if you were dribbling the ball up the court and then you got checked like that, cheap shotted like that, the very least of what you would do is actually what Nikola Jokic did, you know, and that is to get out and shoulder check him. At the very most, you would see fists being swung or a bigger two-hand push to the back, because that was uncalled for. And I don't care what you thought of what the situation was happening. The Nuggets are smashing you. You guys thought you were really good. Jokic is in the middle of the team smashing you. Like, he's the reason why you're
dropped the triple right double.
Yeah. You are frustrated at this whole situation. You might have thought there was a foul down there, so now you're going to take it out on this guy. And then you are so comfortable with the fact that you think that you are the tough guy in that situation that you just get up and walk away as if nothing is going to happen.
Just turned his back and walked off.
Just turned his back and walked off.
That's almost more disrespectful than the shoulder check.
Let me tell you, it's so disrespectful. But also, you got a little window into what he thought of Nikola Jokic. Thought he was soft is what he thought. It's like, I'm going to do whatever I want to you. And I'm not even so worried about you. I'm so not worried about you. I'm going to just turn my back and walk away. Well, he learned that day that it didn't go down like that with Nikola Jokic.
How can anybody think that Jokic is soft at this point in his game? He is by far the best big man in the NBA, and he annihilates people in the paint.
Yes, he does. And he's just a big, strong dude. And you know, and I think for the – let's just backtrack to the Phoenix Suns series a few months ago in last season. There was the game that he got ejected after that. And you had the incident where he hacked down on the guy, and then everybody comes together. And Devin Booker, I remember, ran up to Jokic as if he was going to, you know, he's going to chest him up, get face-to-face with him. And then all of a sudden there was a point at which Jokic didn't even move. And you could see Devin Booker's eyes go, oh, wait, this guy is 7 feet tall, 270 pounds. And he looked like he's not scared of anybody. Yes, he's not scared of anybody. And that's, I think the message that he sent, and obviously he's going to miss a game. He got suspended a game because of it. But the message he sent was, yes, I agree with you 1,000%, Matt, because he needed to do that. what these other players in the NBA need to know is, yeah, he might be the Joker, but he ain't the guy. He's not the one. Like, he's not the one. You want to go mess with somebody, you might want to start somewhere else, because Nikola Jokic isn't the one. And for the Nuggets, I think it's doubly important, because this is a team that there's a lot of analysis out there from the last couple of seasons that says, well, they need to be tougher. Well, they need to have some guy who has a chip on their shoulder. They need somebody to show that this team isn't playing. This is not the team to be messed with. Well, Jokic put that on the court for you in all in one instance. And I think that was very important for him. I think it was very important for the basketball team. And I don't care that he's losing one game for it, because I think the benefits outweigh the losses here in this one scenario. And so, yeah, you know what? Anybody who's a competitor, you know, you're not going to let that slide.
Never.
You know, so I was you know, I don't know what the right wording is, but I certainly wasn't worried about how he responded to that. And quite frankly, I was encouraged by how he responded to that, because I think it shows everybody what the real deal is. Now, as in regards to his brothers.
Yeah, we got to talk about this.
Yeah. His brothers are tough guys. I mean,
real tough guys.
But you know what's so funny about it? And I know them both. They're the nicest people on the face of the earth is what they are.
Most tough guys are, until you put them in a corner.
Well, until you mess with their family.
Yep.
And, you know, and it's ever since Jokic stepped one foot in America, those two guys have had his total back. And there have been games in the past where Jokic, especially when he was a young player, a young rookie, or his first, second year in the league, and there might have been a dust up on the court. He might have taken a cheap shot and wasn't the same Jokic as we see today. Might not have retaliated, might not have stood up and said, yo, you ain't doing this to me. And you would see his brothers run to the edge.
They're going to come fight.
Yes. Basically to the edge of the court and basically say, you're not messing with our brother. You're not doing that to him. And that's the kind of relationship that they have. And you think Jokic is big.
They're huge.
Yeah.
All three of them together are like three door frames. I just love the fact that they went and made a Twitter account just to go after the Morris twins. Yeah, I love it.
I mean, these aren't the dudes to be messed with. And if it takes them having to physically show somebody that, they might do that. And
they're Eastern European from like Yugoslavia and shit. They've seen civil war and strife and, you know, really, 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 you know, hardcore living circumstances through generations of their families. And I mean, it's not some like MTV raps bullshit like the Morris brothers grew up with, like thinking they're tough. Like the Morris brothers are only tough because they're bigger than everybody and they play basketball at Kansas and they think they're tough guys. The Jokic brothers are bona fide, like tough people. That it's just a different, it's a different kind of circumstance that the individuals are from. And like, if it would have been the Morris brothers spouting off on Twitter about this circumstance against, like, I don't know, Rudy Gobert or something, Rudy just would have laughed it off and everything. And the Morris brothers can keep being the punks that they are. They do this and they put a target on themselves the next time these guys play too. Cause I don't think Joker's memory is short. Number one, I think he remembers everything. And the Nuggets are always going to be, in my opinion, looking for that motivation. Cause they're always going to be they're a good butt team. And this could, I think that this is an opportunity for them to take the true tough guy mantle in the NBA and run with it. I don't care if they're nasty. I don't care if they're fouling people. I don't care if people are on the floor. The nastier and the chippier, the better, in my opinion, for the Denver Nuggets.
Well, to be able to show that, sometimes it gets a little ugly, right? You know, I mean,
the good thing.
I mean, you don't get that reputation by just being Mr. Nice Guy all the time. Like, sometimes things don't look great for even for people who love you, are like, ooh, I don't know if that was quite the right. Yeah, but you know what? It was necessary. And I think that's the space that Jokic was living in right there, which, this might not look the greatest it ever needs to look, but you know what? It's necessary to prove a point and then to show the rest of the league that don't bring that to my doorstep, man. Don't bring that to my doorstep, because if you do, you know, you might not like what happens to you next. And what I think the effect league-wide is going to have is like, nobody's going to mess with him. I mean, you're not going to see that kind of of cheap shot. You're not going to see people test him, try to get into his face. You start to gain the respect from a toughness standpoint that maybe you hadn't had in your career to this point. And I think that's where Jokic is, and I think it's good for the Nuggets too. I remember the 2009 Nuggets team with Kenyon Martin and Birdman and those guys, and this is what they got into. They did this kind of stuff routinely. You were going to get an elbow, a straight elbow. You might get put on the ground, hard foul, and then they were going to look at you like, what are you going to do? And you didn't do anything because you understood what was happening right here, who the real tough guy was. And so for that basketball team, Chauncey was on that team too, and Dante Jones, it was just a bunch of rugged dudes who you knew you weren't going to mess with. And so I think that's where the Nuggets, they needed a little injection of that, and Jokic gave it to them.
Well, he's going to miss one game against the Pacers, and I could care less. Hopefully the Nuggets can get a win against Indiana, and we will see. But hats off to the Joker for defending himself, number one, but also for just setting that tone physically as the season goes on. Mm-hmm. Chris Diff joins us here on episode 133 of McChesney Unchained at DNVR. Make sure you go to thednvr.com, check out all the content. All right, couple college football games from last weekend. CSU loses to Boise State again. Boise State has become CSU's bugaboo, but then they follow that up with a loss to Wyoming for the boot. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but that's their two biggest games of the year back-to-back, and they dropped both of them. Do you think Adazio can survive this in Fort Collins before we move on to Boulder?
Boy, that's a good question. It's what's interesting to me about CSU season is, you know, there was a point at which I thought they might be turning a corner. You know, so you lose to South Dakota State to start. You come back, but then you show little signs of life. All right, so it's a tough luck loss to Vanderbilt. You bounce back with a victory. Then you look really good against Iowa. Like, that was the game that really did open my eyes. I was like, wow. I mean, they're standing toe to toe. Iowa at the time was number 5 in the nation. Yeah. You reel off some wins after that, and it's like, okay, maybe they are getting their feet up under them. But then after you beat New Mexico, you've lost every game since. And it's hard for coaches to survive that. There's no doubt about it. Now, I'm sure Adazio will just go, look, this is my first full non-COVID season here. And so can I get more than just one season? And maybe he's – maybe he's right in saying that. I don't know, but the athletic director knows what the trajectory of the program is, no matter what you say, where the recruiting is, where the player development is, what it actually looks like, even the results, even if you're losing, are there steps being made that say to them, okay, but he'll have this turned around sooner rather than later. I don't know that that's the case. I don't know that they can look at that and say exactly that right now. Like, maybe a month ago, you might've looked at it and said, okay, maybe so. And I don't, so he's definitely on thin ice. There's no doubt about it. You can't keep taking beat downs to Wyoming in that game. Like, that's a non-starter at CSU. You can't lose that game and get beat down in that fashion and then continue to expect to keep your job. So, he's going to have a good strong finish to the end of the season to make his case.
Yeah, I don't think that they will fire him just from a money standpoint, but they've got to figure that out because, CSU has been in despair for quite a long time as well without a 2016 season like CU had in between their 20-year run of despair. Right. All right, so CU gets a big win in double overtime against Oregon State, 37-34. I was very impressed with how they played and how they looked. This was the team I thought we were going to see at the beginning of the season. It just took a long time for them to get to this spot. I'm having trouble believing that firing one offensive line coach Mitch was atrocious at his job. We're not sitting here debating that. I find it hard to believe that he's the only reason they've turned this corner. I think there's a lot of internal change, more commitment to the running game, things of that nature. What have you seen? What have you seen from CU that makes you believe? I think they can beat UCLA. I think they can beat Washington. I think they can give Utah a run. UCLA is not a great team. Washington is on the ropes. Jimmy Lake is not coaching this week. He got suspended. They're going to be looking for a new head coach in Seattle. And then you never know if you walk into Utah at 5-6, if what could happen on that Saturday. So they have a lot to play for in Boulder right now. And I was very, very, very happy to see them turn that corner the other day offensively, at least. Lewis looks like he might be able to play the position.
Yeah, you know what's wild is for a team that struggled for so many weeks to score points, they literally, their offensive performance got a defensive coordinator fired. Oregon State fired their defense coordinator after that game. And I just thought that that was just really wild because CU couldn't score until 2 weeks ago.
They couldn't score points. They couldn't even tie their shoes.
Yes. And so, and I always thought back to what you said, because you said this on our air on Altitude too, just in terms of changing an offensive line coach being any kind of, I mean, so significant that now all of a sudden that they can just move the ball and score the points. And it just is, it's amazing to think that maybe, and as you said, there are other factors here, but that seems to be the overarching factor. And to your point, it always did blow my mind about CU this year that they did not commit to the running game more. You literally had the Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year is your running back.
Yep.
And you didn't lean on that individual. You didn't lean on Broussard.
They didn't use him
from
at all.
The beginning of the season. Yeah. Knowing that your quarterback was as young as he is and as inexperienced as he is. And I just thought that that was such a huge mistake, and now you're getting around to it. And great, now you look great in these last couple of games. Your offense is moving the ball at a clip that it has not moved the entire season. But wow, now it's like, okay, there's three games left. You could have been doing this at the beginning of the season. And that's the CU fan in me, just the why haven't we been doing this since day one part of me. Now, having said this, it is very encouraging to see them play this way. It is too bad to me that they wasted a really good defense this season, because the defense was good.
And I thought that if they – look, they gave up 32 points a game last year, which is bad. I really thought that if they averaged anywhere between 18 and 21 points a game given up this year, that they could win 8 or 9 games and be in contention in the South. And they're giving up 19.5 points a game. Or like, I think it's 20.5 now after a 34-point give up. But that's the number we wanted to see, and it didn't come to fruition until it did. I mean, who's to say they can't get on a run here on these last 3 weeks? I know they've never won in L.A., but that is – look, that's skewed. They've never won in L.A. in the Pac-12, but CU has walked into the Rose Bowl before and beat the shit out of UCLA. I know I was on the team. So,
I was covering that team.
That's what I'm saying. Like, these, I understand they haven't won in L.A., but they have. I understand Washington, the W on the helmet looks a certain way nationally, but they're not as good as they have been. And CU beat them 2 years ago at home in Folsom. So, the Utah game is one that they've got to overcome. Utah is damn good and beat Stanford 52-7 on Friday night. So do you think that they have a chance over the next 3 weeks to maybe fight for bowl eligibility the last game of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a chance.
Another 5-7 season in Boulder?
Yeah. I mean, I think they have a chance. I think the UCLA game will be a tough game. UCLA, I mean, Chip Kelly, he wants to run the ball. So – you know, they're going to be tested. The defensive line, linebacker is going to be tested. And that's just the way that's going to be. And so if you can hold up there and your offense can continue to do what it's been doing the last couple of weeks, then yeah, I mean, that's a game that looks like it's a winnable game. It is still a UCLA team that, you know, started the season off by beating LSU and looking really good. And so they have that kind of performance in them, whether they have put that on the, you know, they've been obviously very inconsistent this season. But they have that in them too. So of the next two games, this is the one that, you know, if you get this one, now you're set up really nice going into Washington, because you're right. This has just not been the season for them. And if you can get momentum from beating Oregon State, then beating UCLA going into a Washington game, wow, okay. You know, you find some way to win that game. Then you just see what you can do against Utah, because Utah is legit good. I believe they're number 25 in that college football playoff poll. So it's a legit good team, and you would have to bring your A game in there. But to even get to that point, you got to get past these two next two tests. Do I think they can do it? Yeah, I do.
I mean, the same team beat UCLA and Folsom last year. Let's remember that.
Yeah, for sure. And look, the quarterback at UCLA is a year. He's a year wiser, so we'll see. I mean, it'll be a tough game. There's just no doubt about that. But I think also this, Matt, you must have momentum going into next season. You must. And, you know, you had momentum coming out of last season, coming into this one. And that was the legs were chopped off of that right at the beginning of this season.
Yeah.
And so if you are the CU football team and Carl Durrell, you need momentum going into spring football and then into next season. If you are Brendan Lewis, you need momentum. These last three games are, quite frankly, they're an audition. Because in spring football, is Carl Durrell going to go, all right, open competition in quarterback in like a legit, this is really open competition at quarterback? Or will it be, this is open competition at quarterback in the, well, but we need to have competition at quarterback, but this is going to be our guy
right
going into next fall. So these next three games for him are uber important. And so I think for those reasons, both of those reasons, CU needs to show really, really well and get some momentum exiting this season and then into spring football for next season.
Well, I know it's the Buff in me, but I'm going to take them on the road this weekend against UCLA. And I don't know what the line is on DraftKings, but I don't care. I'm definitely putting some bread on it too, because I want to be as invested as humanly possible for this trip to the Rose Bowl. I think that they are headed in the right direction. The transfer portal, I think, is going to be a very unique opportunity for CU this offseason to go get some defensive help at the linebacker position and whatnot. I'm eager to see what kind of recruiting class they bring in. So we'll see how all that goes. All right. Chris Dempsey joins us here on McChesney Unchained, episode 133. We get into the NFL now. And mainly I just want to talk about the Denver Broncos. We're not going to go too broad on the league. The midway point of the NFL has hit us. We're already talking about how bad the refs are, and God almighty, they are. Monday night shit was just, I mean, have you ever, I know you've seen it before because you're in the media, but yeah. That's the kind of stuff with the ref moving into Cassius Marsh and throwing the flag.
Yeah.
Those, the taunting penalties, all that kind of stuff. I think it's really changing some of these games' outcomes. And when you give refs this kind of power, good shit usually doesn't happen. Give me your thoughts on that before we get into the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, and it just seems to me and to so many people that this emphasis on taunting is just unnecessary. Like, why? For what?
Totally unnecessary.
You could probably count on one hand the instances where somebody's taunting has resulted in some sort of big, huge altercation between two football. Like,
so he looked at guys. He just got a sack, he did a spin kick, and looked at somebody for too long. That's why you're throwing a penalty? What the fuck are we talking about? That's terrible.
It really is terrible. And then and I know Mike Tomlin is on the obviously it benefited his team. And he's on and so he was like, listen, we're just trying to clean our game up. It was not dirty.
It ain't dirty. it's softer and nicer than it's ever been.
Yeah. And it's too bad, because a penalty like that should never have a significant impact on the outcome of the game. And it did. And, you know, and that's, I don't know how the NFL can feel any kind of good about that.
Why do they keep doing this, though? Why do they keep every now and then they put these rules in where we're always complaining about the rule and the ref, and then they just change the fucking rule after the season, and they're like, that didn't work, but we're going to do this to screw with the game. Like, they can never just have a complete product. That they don't need to have a taunting rule. They don't need to over call holding penalties. They don't need to, you know, they don't need to have the targeting rule on the quarterback where if you push him and your hand hits his face mask, it's a 15-yard penalty. This shit is getting ridiculous. It's taking away from the purity of the game as a guy who played it, in my opinion.
Well, and in terms of the taunting, it's kind of mixed messages. So celebrate all, like, the entire defense can run all the way down to the
That's not taunting. Run the boat, shit. Like, come on.
I know. So it's like, all right. So I mean, is this, can you do this or can you not do this? Like, you're like, which one is it? And you know, it's just, it's too bad, because I think you know, it's, you can't have those types of penalties be the ones that out, that that impact outcomes, and that clearly did. So,
well, shit, man. I, watching games these days, I'm more confused on what a penalty is than like Deshaun Watson's masseuse trying to figure out what he wants. You know, I'm just sitting there super confused. Like, oh, okay, that's he just de-cleated some guy. That's not a penalty. He blew on Kyler Murray's ankle too hard. That's a penalty. He looked at the sideline. That's a penalty. The whole defense got a pick, ran down to the camera, took a row the boat picture, and like were throwing up signs with their helmets off, but that's not. So I've gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, every time there's a big play, I'm like, okay, just run off the field. Just leave the field. Because, you know, like if you're a better, or you like you use DraftKings or FanDuel and all these different platforms, I personally think that there should be a site out there that like tells you what crew is working which game and how many holding penalties they call and how strict they are on the taunting stuff, because that absolutely changed the outcome of that game the other night on Monday night. The Bears should have won that game. Well, they were in a position to win that game. I don't say should have. They were in a position to win. They made a huge play. He stared at the sideline a little bit too long, and fucking super geek ref guy decided to throw a flag because he didn't like it. That's bullshit. Like, if I'm Cassius Marsh, I'm getting kicked out of that game for screaming at the dude.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's just, it really is just head shaking. And honestly, Matt, I actually think, you know, the league puts the refs in bad scenarios, because they expect the referees to call these, and the referees have to call them. And it's not the referees that came up with this rule. It's the stupid competition committee that came up with the rule that now the refs have to enforce.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? And so it's like, what are we all doing here? Like, couldn't our energy be put somewhere else that's much more important than to this dumb thing here that is ruining games, literally ruining games?
I mean, look, the roughing the quarterback penalties and the taunting penalties are egregiously ruining football and targeting. I think the targeting stuff, targeting has kind of calmed down a little bit. Only the egregious ones get called now. Targeting in college football and kicking kids out is atrocious. But those two calls in the NFL are, in my opinion, swaying games. And they've got to do something about this. But then not turn it on its head and change something else that we just focus on at that point. I think they do it on purpose too, just to get us talking about it, the sons of bitches. So I guess we'll see what happens there. All right, Denver Broncos. They, look, on Friday, we pretty much said there was absolutely no way this was going to happen. I sat there and I was like, I don't see a situation where they can win this game. And then they went out and Dallas shit all over themselves, and Denver took advantage of it. And that, you know, the most telling part of the whole game to me was the opening fourth and two, when Justin Simmons walks into the box and Dak Prescott doesn't even identify him, and he's just really nonchalant, like, oh, we're just going to run this zone play and see what happens. And they're obviously overmatched. Like, that's the perfect circumstance for you to take a shot and change the play and be an elite quarterback, and he didn't do it. Simmons stuffs the run. They get a huge turn of events. They get up early. Before you know it, it's 14-0, and then by the end of the third quarter, it's fucking 30-0. So I'm like, I'm sitting here like, what in the hell is going on? If I would have known this was going to happen, I would have put my mortgage on the damn Broncos on DraftKings. So, I mean, what in the hell is going on with the Denver Broncos? I mean, is losing Von Miller motivated this team that much? Was he really the problem?
There's no way that
he may not be the problem as a player, but who's to say that his nonchalant attitude didn't rub off on his entire team?
Yeah. I mean, you know what? I can't rule it out. Who knows? I watching that game, here's what I thought as a Broncos fan. You had this in you the entire time this season. And
what
you
the hell is going on?
I know, like, what? Like, I can't even believe that you are putting this performance on the field and you got smashed by the Raiders and you got beat by the Ravens and you just looked bad and couldn't score points on offense and you walked out here and you dominated a team that nobody thought you could dominate. Matt, I asked you on air on Friday. I was like, okay, but is there any scenario that the Broncos could win this
game? I said no.
I don't think so.
Like, I was racking my brain, like, okay, yeah. if everybody gets hurt and they just don't show up at all, then yeah, maybe they could win. But look, I understand the NFL is fickle, and it seems to me that the teams that have something to play for this year specifically, those teams tend to win. Like the Raiders, when they had something to play for, the Gruden thing, they came out and won.
Yeah.
You know, yep. Like the Broncos have their back against the wall in this game. They came out and win. You know, the Arizona at the beginning of the year going to L.A., nobody gave them a shot in hell. They went out and won.
Yeah.
There's always, you know, at the beginning of the year with Aaron Rodgers going back, they laid an egg in the opener in New Orleans. Everybody thought they would drop that game. New Orleans won. So I look at the Broncos now and I'm really looking at this entire situation and going, okay, that's great. They won. I'm not going to sit here and beat a dead horse. They beat the shit out of the Cowboys. That's awesome. It's one win. Vic Fangio has said countless times that we're on a six-day life cycle in the NFL, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
That said, I am now as worried about Philadelphia this weekend because I watched every snap of Philly Chargers, and they were a play away from winning that game. They are not a bad football team. They are super physical up front. Fletcher Cox is a man, and he's going to be playing against a rookie in Quinn Meinerz. I want to see if the Broncos are mature enough to handle this win, Dimps. Yeah. Like, I'm looking at it like, are they 5-4 and fighting for a spot? They go drop this game to Philly and they're 5-5 going into the bye after that win against Dallas. I think the Broncos country could be like teetering on a ledge, bro. Like, hey, we're really good. Oh, we suck. We're really good. We said, like, this bipolar shit is driving me crazy. I can only imagine how it's treating the fans.
Yes, yes, that's it. And that's the whole thing right there. It's like, well, how good are we? Are we not good? Are we great? That's what the Dallas Cowboys win did, was really throw just so much confusion into it. It's like, after the first three games, I think we all understood that the competition wasn't the best competition, but they beat those teams, they handled those teams. And then you go into a stretch where you're playing some tough teams and you lose all those games. Like, well, maybe the Broncos just really aren't as good as we thought they were. And then you go into maybe the best team of that stretch.
After trading your franchise player.
I know.
It makes no sense.
And you look like that Dallas looks like they shouldn't even be on the field with you. And that's, I mean, they didn't win by just a field. They didn't just kick a field at the end to win. It was 30-0.
Dominated that football game, bro. Yes. Like, it wasn't even close, just turning the ball over in an insane clip. And no, they were three and out punt. You know what? The Cowboys looked like the Broncos. I'd like to think that they can keep this going, but I'm also totally and unequivocally freaked out that Philadelphia, playing with nothing to lose at 3-5, and the Broncos with all this momentum, quote unquote, on Sunday in Power Field, like, that place is going to be humming. Everybody's going to be looking forward to my week and getting healthy in the AFC West pack back half of the schedule. People are already overlooking the Eagles. They're already talking, like, did we not win anything from the last week? And I'm hoping the team can learn from it. I don't know if they can, though, because they are as streaky as any team in football. And I do not feel good about the Broncos this weekend against the Eagles at all.
Yeah, we're going to find out because, I think one of the things we have to find out is, are they actually really good? I mean, are you good? So now you can show us. So you beat a team that everybody had held in higher regard. And now you're going against a team that most people do not hold with any – should. And I would say this, the one thing, and until the Dallas game, the one thing that the Broncos have done is beat the bad teams, just lose to the good teams. Like, that's really what they've done generally this season. And then so the Cowboys game would have been the first time that they broke that pattern. And so if they just keep the pattern of beating teams that aren't quite as good, they should definitely beat the Eagles. Will not be easy to do that, but it doesn't have to be easy. You just got to get the W. And then if they get the W, then you can kind of recalibrate and then ask yourself, okay, so where exactly do they fit in the AFC? Because AFC looks okay.
it's pretty weak this year. At this point, midway through the season, with Kansas City at 4-4 and Tennessee, I know they looked really good against the Rams, but they're without their hammer. Derrick Henry's out. Baltimore is susceptible. They're good, but they're only as good as Lamar Jackson is that day.
Buffalo lost to Jacksonville
on the road. I mean, 9-6. What? They were 15 point favorites or some shit.
And they average over 30 points a game on offense.
Two field goals?
Yes, I know. The AFC, I cannot get sorted out. And that's why, if you're a Broncos fan, if you're the Broncos, period, beat the Philadelphia Eagles. Try to get you some momentum. Get healthy through a bye week, and let's just see what happens. Because the Chargers at one point looked like they were going to be really good. They took a couple of losses. I mean, they're obviously a formidable team, but they're not beyond being beaten. The Kansas City Chiefs have holes. They're in their enterprise right now. The Raiders are whatever.
The Raiders are going to raider, bro. I mean, almost feel bad for Derek Carr, but they're going to nosedive eventually. You would have to think, with all they have going on, they just got rid of their other first-round pick, too, and Darren Abrams. What was he doing on social media? Brandishing firearms and threatening people? What are you doing, bro? You can't point your 45 at the fucking screen, idiot.
I know. It's so dumb.
It's just stupid.
There's not a lot of smart thinking going on out there, but you look at the valley, so then you look at the landscape of the AFC, and all of a sudden – it just looks like if you can get yourself together and with a defense that the Broncos have, they it's not like they walked into Dallas with a bad defense. They walked in with one of the best defenses. Okay.
All right. Well, hold on. Then, yeah, well, let's just finish this. Okay.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. All right. So, look, man, with Philadelphia coming into town and the Broncos looking to go 6-4 into the bye week, do you think that they have a chance to win this game this weekend and they're going to be mature enough to handle it, in your opinion, before we get you off here?
Yeah, you know what? I actually do. And here's why. I think that Teddy Bridgewater...
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.